Say something interesting, man. Come on. Padded Room Radio is on the air. My name is Darian, special guest therapist in the house tonight, Jesse from the Horacopia podcast. Jesse, what's up, dude?
Not much. Just glad to be here, listening to this show for so long and finally being a guest.
Oh, stop it. You're going to make me blush, you big lug. How have you been, man? What's going on with you?
Oh, not much. Just been doing what I do and... Amazing to see how the network's been growing, and
yeah, man, you guys got something going on over there at the Random Podcasting Network.
Yeah, we got something. I don't know well, exactly what
Jesus
that is.
Jesus Christ, man, you got a show for every day of the week. You got what? Wrestling. You got the Bump of the Night
once a month.
You got Bump of the Night, which does like all the weird, paranormal stuff.
Yeah, all the weird shit.
You got the I Hate Your Face, which is really
the less said about that, the better.
It's like the ugly stepchild of the network over there.
You know, the funny thing about them is that's the reason the network even exists, because they couldn't get themselves on iTunes.
Really?
So James was like, hey, we should do a network with all the shows you're involved on, and that way we'll be on iTunes. So that was, they are the reason, one of the reasons the network exists.
How do you not get put on iTunes? I don't understand that.
I don't know. Their link kept getting rejected. I don't understand it. I tried it. I'm not sure what their problem was, but.
I was on there in like 35 seconds after our first episode. And every now and then I think they check up on me, because I'll get an email from iTunes every now and then saying I'm still good. I think, really, as long as you're not shouting the N-word over and over again or giving instructions on how to make pipe bombs, I think you're okay.
Which, I don't know what their problem was.
Well, I was going to say that's probably exactly what... Are they shouting the N-word over and over again?
Not that I know of, but I don't listen to every single show, so who knows?
Yeah, I try to keep it to a minimum myself.
I feel like people will be tired of that show anyway. It seems like I was on it. Jesus.
Holy cow, man. That show will give you a headache. Now, Jesse, you know, we have a long-standing relationship, your podcasting network in the padded room, but unfortunately, I can't have just anybody in here, dude. The inmates are going to want some credentials from you. Okay. So I got to put you on the spot, my man. We need your top three horror films of all time. Go.
All right. Number three would be Friday 13th, Part 6.
That's a good one.
Two, I would say Tucker and Dale. And right. Number one, it has to be Army of Darkness.
Okay, I'll buy that. I think Tucker and Dale's getting a sequel here pretty soon, isn't it?
Yeah, I can't wait. I'm excited.
Yeah, dude, that's going to be awesome. I'm a big Alan Tudyk fan. I love that guy.
Yeah, that movie is just amazing.
Yeah. Friday the 13th, Part 6. What's your favorite aspect of Friday the 13th, Part 6? Is it Crispin Glover, or...
He was in part four. Or...
Oh, shit, you're right.
Six is the one that everybody else says. You said to Alan.
Yeah.
That's when we get, like, zombie Jason back from the dead.
Undead Jason, that's what it is,
I just like that movie. I don't know why. It's just, it's fun, and it may have been the first one I saw, just like Alan said. Yeah. So I'm not sure.
Tommy Jarvis administration.
Yeah. That's, I liked how they went to that arc and everything, so...
And then you got the Army of Darkness. What did you think of the recent Evil Dead remake?
I really enjoyed it.
Right?
I know some people didn't, but I had a lot of fun with it. I was the only one in our group when we went to the theater that actually liked it.
Dude, all you need for a decent Evil Dead movie is just a double scoop of gore, right?
And that's what we got.
Yeah, dude. You got like a triple scoop in that fucking thing. Loved
There's it. Some scenes in that movie that are amazing. Nail guns and
yeah, dude. The various severed appendages. Holy shit.
Yeah, that movie's incredible.
It's good stuff, man.
What do you think about the TV series?
The Evil Dead TV series? Yeah. Well, I guess it's supposed to be produced by Sam Raimi, and it's supposed to star Bruce Campbell. So
should be good.
Should maybe. Be. I just don't understand how you're going to get that heavy into the gore and the violence and still be on network television, right?
Although we do have American Horror Story, which has some pretty fucked up shit on it.
Oh, so. I love me some American Horror Story, dude.
Oh, the new little trailer things for that.
Freak Show, man. What? Yes!
That's going to be amazing. Freak Shows are set is a great idea for horror, especially with them. You never know what they're going to do.
Yeah, dude. Loving it. You follow all three seasons so far?
Pretty much. I haven't watched the final episode of season 3, but season 2 is my favorite so far.
I got to tell you, I think probably season 3 was my favorite, but that final episode, I don't want to ruin it for you. Do you plan on watching it anytime soon?
Yeah, I'm going to. I don't know. I've heard negative things.
Yeah, dude. The big reveal on that one was pretty fucking
Because the lead-up to it was awesome.
Yeah, dude. Who's the next Supreme and all that shit? Yeah. And then
I found out who it was, and it wasn't who I suspected.
No! It wasn't even somebody that was, like, in the running for it, yeah, which kind of pissed me off.
Kind of like, I don't know if I want to watch it, but yeah. I love the Insane Asylum, though.
Yeah, that was a good one. A little busy, to be honest with you.
Yeah, there's a little too much shit going on.
But when you got that kind of shit involved, I say, fuck it. Get busy. Go crazy with it.
Bring us a circus.
Yeah. I'm excited for that stuff, man. All righty. Let's get into a little horror news, shall we?
Sure.
Horror news.
Jesse, you a big Stephen King fan, are you?
Yeah. I haven't read a ton of his stuff, but I like what I've read and I like what I've seen, so.
How do you feel about The Stand?
I love that miniseries. I remember my mom and I renting it on Easter weekend when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And it was such a big deal because it came in 3 VCR tapes, which I had never seen in my life.
Yeah, right. That's like a full 8-hour shift you're going to sit through The Stand.
Yep. I love that, though.
Yeah, it's good. With Gary Sinise.
Yeah.
Well, you may or may not know that The Stand is headed for a remake.
I'm looking forward to that.
Guess who's going to be playing Randall Flagg?
I heard a rumor, or I saw something today, but I didn't know what character it was, so I will let you tell me.
Matthew McConaughey?
Oh, I saw he was going to be it. I know that's who he was going to play.
I think that would probably kick copious amounts of ass. Awesome.
Especially after seeing him in True Detective.
Dude, the True Detective! I keep singing the praises of True Detective. I don't think anybody's listening to me anymore.
People, you need to watch that if you have HBO. Dude. Or you find it.
You gotta get on it, man. It's I mean, awesome. I understand Matthew McConaughey gets a bad rap because he plays a lot of douchey guys.
He's a good actor.
He's a fucking amazing actor, man.
And I will admit, like, episode 1 and 2, I wasn't completely hooked into the show, but by episode 3, I was, okay, I need to marathon this because it was amazing.
Oh, dude, you gotta do it, man.
He'll kill it as Randall Flagg, I think.
Oh, yeah. I mean, in the original, he's not that dissimilar from the guy that played him in the original either. I don't know who that dude was, but
I don't either. But
yeah, the southern drawl and the kind of
yeah, he'll play good.
Yeah, he'll do it. He'll do it pretty nicely. What did you think of The Woman in Black there, Jesse? Did you see that one?
Funny story about that. I saw all of it but the last 3 minutes because we were in a local theater here that is now been sold and re-owned, and the projector broke 3 minutes before the damn movie was over, so I never saw the end.
Tell me you got your money back.
Mm.
If they didn't refund your money,
yes, they did.
Okay, I was about to say
what I saw.
I would probably burn that theater to the ground.
It was the first that happened, so
yeah, exactly.
They had like the old projectors that the previous owners were too poor to invest in, like the digital.
Oh wow.
So this shit was breaking down all the time.
Nice.
But I enjoyed what I saw of it, except I didn't see the end.
Do you play? Have you seen it since then?
I read about it, but I haven't rewatched it.
Okay, yeah, you probably know what the ending is. Yeah. The Woman in Black, Angel of Death, the big sequel. Trailers are up on Bloody Disgusting.
How's that look?
It looks okay. From what I gather, it takes place at the same house. but about 40 years later after the events involving Daniel Radcliffe. And I think, from what I gathered, it looks like it's like World War One or World War Two. So I think it looks pretty cool. From what I gathered, it looks like they turned that house into some kind of an orphanage or a refugee camp.
Oh, boy.
And then, yeah, the lady comes back and kids are there and nothing good comes from that.
Should be good, though.
Yeah, hopefully. Man. If you're in the mood for a good ghost story, that's definitely the way to go.
Did you like the first one?
I did. It's a little slow to start with. And
yeah,
little depressing, too. I think. All that stuff with Daniel Radcliffe and his son and mom's dead and we're broke and I have to go, you know, do this shit. So you're just going to stay with this random old lady that I guess is taking care of you.
Yeah, there wasn't much happiness in that movie at all.
None at all, man. I don't think there was. This is a little awkward. Robert Kirkman has addressed the issue of Daryl Dixon's sexuality.
Yes, I saw that. A lot of women are going to not be happy.
Well... I mean, did you read the actual statement that he made?
No, I just saw the headline.
He really didn't say anything.
Okay.
All he said, I guess the question was, why hasn't Daryl Dixon had a love interest or, you know, had really any kind of a relationship with anybody other than Rick? Yeah. And Robert Kirkman's reply was, well, AMC said it was okay if he was gay.
Oh.
So that's not really telling
me. That's not either saying really anything.
Yeah, but so I don't know.
I'm surprised though that they haven't had a main character on there that is gay or lesbian. So
well, I kind of felt that way about that one guy, the black guy that's kind of like an alcoholic.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I kind of got like a little which team is he playing for vibe from him.
That's true.
I don't know, man. I mean, I never followed the comic books, so I'm just going by what I saw on the show.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, looking back, he is kind of ambiguous.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he's kind of, I don't know, man. I don't know.
Maybe he plays for both teams.
That could be. Hey, man, it gets lonely in the woods of Georgia, I'm sure. Oh, what else we got here? Hey, how do you feel about Eduardo Sanchez there, Jesse?
I'm a big fan.
Mm.
Well, I like Blair Witch.
Right.
And I really enjoyed, what is it called? The Alien movie he did.
Oh, Altered.
Altered. But I never saw Lovely Molly, but I'm looking forward to the Bigfoot movie, if that's what you're
going
to talk about.
That's exactly where I'm going. It's getting a release date of October 24th in limited theaters.
Because a pre-buzz from different sites, people have given that good reviews, so I'm hoping it'll be good.
Yeah, I'm sure it will be. I mean, he's going back to found footage. And yeah. I think he's kind of become the master of the found footage. Dude, you got to get on the Lovely Molly, though. That's a bad motherfucker right there.
Okay, because I've heard so much mixed reviews about it. I didn't know.
It is a little polarizing just in its ambiguity because you don't really get any answers.
Okay.
If you have the time to check out the bonus the bonus features on the DVD or the Blu-ray, then it kind of snaps things into focus. But in a way, I think you're better off not knowing. You know what I mean? Because it deals a lot with drug addiction and paranoia and possible paranormal activity and just a fucking enema of weird horror crap happening to this poor young lady. So if you're looking for an enema, a good place to go would be Lovely Molly. Exists hit October 24th, limited theaters. That's going to be a Bigfoot movie. That's kind of exciting, I suppose.
Yeah, it should be good.
Also, we have a full trailer for Amityville The Awakening is up on Bloody Disgusting. It's hitting theaters January 2nd, 2015. What do you think of that there, Jesse?
I'm interested in seeing it. I haven't gotten a chance to see the trailer yet, but I'm a found footage whore, so...
This one's not found footage.
Oh, it's not? I thought it was supposed to be.
No, not from, I mean, unless I really missed something in the trailer.
Oh, okay. So it didn't... Maybe they canceled that and this is something else.
Well,
because they were going to do a found footage originally.
There is a found footage Amityville movie, and it is horrible. It's up on Netflix. I think it's called Amityville Haunting or some crap like that.
Maybe I'm thinking of that.
Yeah, dude. It's got like a fat, obnoxious kid running around with a camera. And
fuck that.
Yeah, dude.
How does this one look?
This one, it almost looks like some kind of a twisted hybrid of Haunting in Connecticut and Amityville.
Okay.
By that, I mean you have... Did you see Haunting in Connecticut, Jesse?
Yes, I did.
Okay, you got the sick kid, and they move there because to get closer to the hospital. And then it's pretty much almost exactly like Haunting in Connecticut with all the activity focusing on a kid. Mm-hmm. But it is in the Amityville house. So I'm not seeing a whole lot of originality here.
It doesn't sound like it.
No, and really, I don't think past the original, I've really been that into any of the Amityville movies.
I haven't either. I remember seeing bits and pieces of them, but the first one's the only one that sticks out in my mind that I've actually seen the whole way through.
Right. There was a 3D one. There was another one with Meg. I think part two had Meg Ryan in it.
Yeah, it was like The Possession or something, I think.
Some crap. And then after that, they started piecemealing it out. To where, like, it was Amityville in the hood, but somebody, like, bought the couch out of the Amityville house and moved it to an apartment, and now the apartment's all fucked up.
Amityville in the hood, otherwise known as a haunted house.
Yeah, pretty much. Oh, I don't know about that shit, man. I think I'll probably pass on The Awakening there.
Yeah, it sounds from what you're saying, I think I will too.
I don't know. If you're really into the Amityville and you're trying to stay up on the franchise there, give it a shot. Otherwise, what the fuck? That's all I got on the old horror news, Jess. You got anything?
The only thing I saw is BBC America is making a Living in the Dead horror series. I suppose I think it's zombies set in like the 1860s or something.
Oh, wow.
Which kind of sounds kind of cool. We haven't really seen zombies on TV in historical times, so...
No, although there was a really cool Civil War zombie movie called Exit Humanity. Have you heard of that?
I've heard of that, and I always saw it on Netflix. I haven't watched it yet.
It's a pretty good show. It's not a bad show. It's pretty low budget, but, I mean, considering what they were going for, it's actually not too bad. Worth looking at, anyway.
Yeah.
All right, that's all we got on the horror news. Let's get into some listener mail, shall we?
Sure.
Listener mail.
Alrighty, we got the usual array of crap. Emails, voicemails, probably a tweet or two.
I have to make a statement before we get into this.
Let's hear it.
I only asked one person to vote for me.
Oh, Jesse.
I knew it was going to come up. I knew it was going to come up.
Jesse. I think you're
and I did not pay her either.
Oh, really?
No.
Not in money anyway, right?
Nothing. I let her co-host on my podcast.
Aha! I knew it.
Yeah, somebody's that's the big
paid
draw.
Off somehow.
Yeah.
Let's see what we got here. Let's start it off with the old emails here. We'll start it off with Kevin, our main man in Japan. Let's see what he has to say. Subject line, vote, go leprechaun, go. Are you serious? This guy's going to vote for the leprechaun. Oh, speaking of which, I should probably give you your votes for this week's. Let me grab the thing real quick here. All right, Jesse, now I'm going to count your votes for this week's matches as two.
All right.
Since you are a listener, and then this coming week's matches is one since you're a host. So.
Sounds good.
In singles, we have Herbert West, Reanimator, versus the leprechaun. What do you think?
I got to go with Kevin. I got to go with leprechaun.
Dude.
The leprechaun's fun. I love Herbert West, but I just think the leprechaun has magic on his side.
Come on!
And he can grant wishes to Herbert West and screw him over.
That's true, but fucking whatever.
I love the animator, but I can't vote against the leprechaun.
You're killing me. In teams, we have the Nightbreed versus the Ghoulies. What do you think?
I think Nightbreed.
Yeah, of course, right?
Yeah.
All right, let's see what Kevin has to say here. Hey, Darian. Recently watched Night of the Creeps on Netflix. Don't think I ever saw it before, actually. And now I know where that famous phrase comes from. Well, I've got good news and bad news. The good news is your dates are here, girls. The bad news is they're dead. That's a great movie. You see Night of the Creeps?
That's a great movie, and that's a great quote.
Oh, yeah, dude. Tom Atkins.
Tom Atkins, Pittsburgh's own.
Yeah, he kills it every time.
Every year I want to go see him. He does Ebenezer Scrooge and Christmas Carol, and I haven't made it yet. I just think it'd be awesome.
Yeah, it would. It's got a shotgun under his bed or something.
Shooting the ghosts.
Fuck yeah. It's good 80s cheesy fun horror movie if you haven't seen it before. Terradome, Reanimator versus Leprechaun. Vote goes to Leprechaun because voting for the home team creature. Yeah, of course it does. That's Kevin's guy, the leprechaun. God damn it, Kevin.
You got to vote for our home teams.
Well, you have to, right? Yeah. Nightbreed versus the Ghoulies. Vote goes to the Ghoulies because the Ghoulies can hide in toilets and bite Nightbreed's ass.
Okay.
Alrighty, if you say so. Kevin, a.k.a. Lonely Bob. Hey, thanks for writing in, Kevin. He's a classy guy, that Kevin. Doesn't know much about horror movies, apparently, but...
Well, apparently I don't either because I pick Leprechaun.
Yeah, neither one of you people, goddammit. Here comes Sean G. Sean G., our main man over at Angry Gnome Comics. Sean G. just got himself the rights to the Puppet Master franchise.
That's awesome. I saw that.
Can you believe that? He's been
a great supporter of all of our shows. So.
Yeah, he's a great guy, that Sean.
He's a great guy.
Subject, Terradome votes. Teams for the Terradomes is an easy call this week. Nightbreed would eat the Ghoulies as a midnight snack. Besides, Freddy is out, and I think I would cry if both my horses were sent to the glue factory in the first round. That's two more for the Nightbreed. Singles is a tougher call. Herbert West is a smart guy, so you'd expect he could figure out a simple way to defeat the Leprechaun. But West is also self-serving and may be easily swayed by false promises of power from the Leprechaun. I'll give the points to the Leprechaun. God damn.
Yes. You're right, Sean. I told you.
Fucking Sean. Not much to say on the movies discussed since I haven't seen any of them other than the tangential talk about The Last House on the Left remake. It's one of the few remakes I like better than the original. Jesse, you seen The Last Houses on the Left?
We just did the original last night.
Yeah, what do you think?
I like it, but I have to go with Sean. I actually like the remake better.
I agree completely, man. I think the in the original, those bumbling cops really kind of pulled you out of it.
They did, and for some reason, the parents, I didn't feel for them at all in the original, as in the new one, or the remake, I did.
Yeah, and that might be just like a, a time thing.
Yeah, I think it was.
70s and all that stuff.
The remake to me is, I was expecting a lot with the original, and I liked it, but it wasn't the gut punch that I expected.
Yeah, right.
And the music's weird, too, throughout.
Yeah, it's a funny thing.
It's like too happy or something.
The music in the original, all that music was actually used in Cabin Fever.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and it's weird because like at the beginning when the girls are running around trying to score weed, there's like this weird la 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 la.
Yeah, that was odd.
But in Cabin Fever, I think that's what's playing when like that bum is being set on fire or something.
I'll have to rewatch that now and pay attention.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Back to Sean. I'm enjoying the guest hosts. It's cool to get some additional perspectives mixed in. Sean. Very cool, Sean. Thanks for writing in, dude.
Good luck with Puppet Master.
He's going to tear it up, man.
Oh, he's going to kill it.
I can tell you right now. Here comes your brother.
Oh, fuck.
Irma Gersh. Yep.
Why am I going to see this man in September? Why?
I have no idea, man. Subject line, blind Frankensteins, Terradome payoffs, and birthday wishes. First off, I Hate Your Face podcast would like to send out a couple of happy birthday wishes to Daly, as well as former guest pantsless supervillain Alan. Okay. Next. Okay, Jesse, we all know that you made it rain fives or tens on the people who voted for Frankenstein last week.
Nope.
Next time you bribe, make it a little less conspicuous, would you? Darian and his guest noticed it right away. We all know the guest I speak of isn't the sharpest knife in the shed. Love you to death, but damn, son. James E. sends his thanks for having him on last week. You should have seen this idiot afterwards, walking around the house, chest all puffed out, thinking he was the king of the world. Didn't catch immersion therapy this week, however, did watch one thing. That would be Serial Killer Culture. Myself and at the Jesse B 83 are going to do a review for it for the Titan of Tite's show, so I won't spoil my thoughts on it. Is that you guys are going on Kruger Nation? Is that what's happening?
Yeah, he wants people to send in reviews, so we're going to record something and send it to him.
Oh, very cool.
That interesting documentary, that's all I'll say.
Okay. That being said, dumb fuck gave you my Terradome picks when he was on, so that's that. Have fun, Jesse. Hippity hoppity, Gersh is out of the house. Deuces!
So apparently Gersh and Jamesy are multiple personalities?
I don't know what the fuck is going on with this dude.
What the hell? I have to ask him this. Apparently he's two different people.
Okay, sure.
I have no idea.
Me neither. I quit keeping track, man. I can't keep up with this guy.
It's not easy, trust me.
I know it. Up next, we got old Crackhouse Matt coming in.
Another I hate your facer.
Yes, sir. Subject line, Jugface and Terradome picks. Jesse, you seen Jugface?
I have seen Jugface.
What do you think of that action?
I enjoyed it. I thought it was weird and strange. I liked the whole cult angle, but overall I thought it was a good movie. I could have done without the weird incestuous stuff. But
yeah.
It wasn't bad.
It's original, if nothing else.
Yeah.
What a terrible show last week. You and that weirdo, Irma Gersh, just jibber-jabbing for an hour and a half of pure nonsensical bullshit. Wait a minute, that's actually what I like about the show. Never mind. I did manage to catch the immersion therapy this week, Jugface. I had it in my queue since you talked about it last on What Are You Looking At, and just never got around to watching it. It wasn't bad, it could have been a lot better though. I enjoyed some of the elements and the overall gist of the plot was about, but I feel like they needed to add some sort of twist to it, or at least a sharp left turn. I mean, it just sort of played out with her eventually coming clean that it was her Jugface and sacrificing herself, and then it ended. I guess I was waiting for some turn of events where either the whole thing turned out to be bullshit or something, I don't know. It just ended sort of flat, I suppose. Pretty decent for immersion therapy, though. I will say this, though. If I was part of that Jugface village and it was my jug that got presented, I'd at least try to make a case that it actually belonged to someone else. I mean, those jugs were really kind of open to interpretation. I'd probably say mine was really Dale or something and offer them $10 or something, just saying. As far as the Terradome this week, I got to go with the Nightbreed for teams. Okay. And for singles, man, I'm going to catch some shit for this. The Leprechaun, you motherfuckers. God damn it. Now, hear me out. I'm going based solely on the story that you laid out for us. Herbert West was in a makeshift lab in Ireland somewhere. I can only imagine he didn't have all the best stuff or materials laying around. Plus, I gotta give the Leprechaun home field advantage here. I just see the little bastard pulling out the W on this one. Good job to you and Irma Gersh for manning up and taking the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge. Uh-oh! Jesse, you took the Ice Bucket Challenge too, didn't you? I saw you do it, man. What'd you think of that?
It was fun. I mean, I was glad to do it, and I donated too. I've heard they say a lot of people just do the ice, but
yeah,
I enjoyed it, and I had to do it after, you know, that bastard called me out.
Yeah, I got called out too, man. Fuck, this fucker Crackhouse Matt called me out.
Oh, is that who did it?
Yeah, the son of a bitch. He got me and Gersh, and then I called out multiple mics, Alan, and Kreese. And then I think you got called out by Gersh, right?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, fuck him too.
Yeah, I was glad to do it though.
Yeah, so. It's something to do. Great videos, and I was happy to see you dragged your wife in on the action, Darian. Normally, I would have passed on this whole gimmick as something strictly for the selfie crowd. However, I read an article earlier this week that talked about how last year the ALS raised $2.9 million, and this year, due to the whole viral ice bucket challenge, they have raised over $42 million. That's right, damn near 20 times more for a disease that most people don't ever really think about or even know a whole lot about. So while I'm sure that there are folks out there strictly doing this ice bucket thing for attention and to get likes on their Facebook page, it really is raising a lot of money and awareness, and I can't hate on that one bit. I was proud to do it and to donate and then pay it forward to you guys, and I was happy to see you and James step up and do the same. Props to you both. That's all I got this week. Looking forward to hearing the upcoming episode with Blind Frankenstein himself, whom also took the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge like a boss. Props to you, Jesse. Crackhouse Matt out. He's a sweetheart, that Crackhouse Matt.
Yeah, did you hear the I Hate Your Face where he ranted for 5 minutes on selfies and hashtags?
I did not.
You need to track that down because that's pretty incredible.
Oh, boy.
He says in it that the only thing he will allow is suicide hashtags if people, or suicide selfies if people are taking a picture as the train hits them.
Wow. Little upset with the selfies.
Little anger there. Problem there, Matt.
I can see that. Either that or he's really into snuff.
Could be that too.
You never know with these people.
He could have snuffs in his crack house.
Ugh. That just got weird. Yeah, next, we got old...
That's something Alan's into. Oh, God.
Yeah, tell me about it. We got old Kreese coming in here. Subject line, PT. This is the playable Silent Hill demo for the PS4. It took me about an hour, really freaked me out, must have shouted Jesus Christ 3 times. Really unnerving and very different playstyle than the other games. All right, Kreese. I think she meant to send me a link here or something, but I don't see one in here.
Maybe, because I think it's on people who played it on YouTube and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, that could be.
It's supposed to be scary as shit, though.
Yeah, I'm excited for it, man. Norman Reedus is, I guess, playing the main guy.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Yes, sir. Okay, we got a couple voicemails here. I don't know who this is, but it looks like they got GP'd because they called in twice. So, I think this is part one.
Oh, wait, that ain't it. Padded room, how's it going? Oh, that sure as shit ain't it either.
Now, listen to this guy.
Hey, fuckos. Listen, okay.
God.
Crackhouse Matt, did your challenge. That ain't gonna happen again. That shit was cold. For a good cause.
Yep, GP'd.
Which I'm sure pissed him off.
I'm sure it did. It's okay. He called back.
What the actual fuck? I get GP'd? Seriously? Anyway, you got this guy on your show this week. He's my spice drop, yes. And ooh. I am going to cuddle the fuck out of him.
Ooh.
I don't need a psychic evaluation. I mean, if you just look at his sexy ass, you know that you don't need one.
Ooh.
He's cuddleable, and that is a word because I just fucking made it up. Eat my balls.
Cuddleable.
His new name is Martin on the Biggio screen.
What in the
hell? He thinks he's a fucking football player. He'll be ending up running the goddamn field goals all the time. That's it. I'm done. Need a bag.
You know, I thought I was having a bad day today, but that just made it all worthwhile.
Yeah, he will lighten your day.
Oh, yeah.
That whole thing stems from I had put that video on Facebook where I was on the news.
Yeah?
And yeah, we were at Steeler training camp, and this reporter interviewed me. And for some reason, Gersh started calling me Martine after some kind of Gabriel Iglesias skit or something.
Alrighty. So I'm sure it makes sense to him, right?
What's that?
I said I'm sure it makes sense to him, right?
Yeah. The spice stuff thing kind of weirded me out, but I've been called it so much, now I just kind of go with it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's.
I don't want to be cuddled, though.
I don't think you're going to have a choice in the matter, my friend.
No. I can't even hide because I won't know my way around their house.
Oh, creepy stuff. Yeah. Let's see who this is.
Hey, it's GP.
Hey, it's GP.
First, it was good to hear Gersh. I mean, between Quotescast and Padded Room, I barely get enough time to listen to you guys, so I don't really get to hear your I Hate Your Face podcast very much, so it was good to hear Gersh, but he seemed a bit subdued. I don't know if, you know, he was, you know, feeling sick or if you paid him off, but so it was good. Let's see, Terror Dome. Herbert West versus the Leprechaun.
Come on, GP. Come on, GP.
Fuck it. All right, Leprechaun.
No!
Yes!
Nightbreed versus the Ghoulies. The Breed will kick their ass, and they can leave the Berserkers locked up in their cages. They don't need them. This is an easy win for them. All right. Immersion Therapy, Chugface. Why did you make me watch this? I mean, okay. Technically, it was okay, but I liked it. And, like, in the first, like, 2 minutes, you see this girl taking the top off and getting all this guy, and you're going, like, I like where this is going. This is pretty cool. You know, he's kind of rocking little body, you know. Then you find out who the guy is. And all of a sudden, oh, my fucking God, really? And and all this other shit with Grandpa and like Song Young as the mommy, like checking her daughter to make sure she's, you know, ruined.
Yeah.
Or like busted, or I mean, it's just too freaking creepy. I mean, the movie's good. It was okay, but damn, I had to take a shower after watching it, man. And it brings me to another thing, Song Young, another one who was screaming hot when she was young. And of course, she's getting older, but don't see any plastic surgery on her.
That's
true. She still looks pretty okay for a little woman.
I don't know about that.
I'm just saying, you know.
I don't know about that.
No, whatever.
I don't know.
All right. I said before I get GP'd, I will talk to you all later. Bye.
Beautiful. Hey, thanks for calling in, GP. That's two more for the Leprechaun and two more for the Nightbreed. You son of a bitch.
Looks like a runaway victory.
It's, it's not going the way that I had expected, Jesse. Son of a bitch. We got one more here. That was GP. This must be your other brother.
Yep.
Hey, Padded Room and Jesse. What's up? So, I spit on your grave. The remake versus the original. The remake is one of the few movies, it gave me a stomach ache. It wasn't like I was going to throw up. It was just, you know, made my stomach hurt. Just like, holy crap with the rape scenes. I still like it, though. Anyway, sorry we're just dragging you through filth, it seems like, dude. Anyway, watch out for that Jussie. You know, he is blind, but he's quick. And he can get handsy. It's weird.
Whoa.
You know, I mean, I thought Gersh was bad, but this guy's worse. And then
Dick.
He's like, no, I'm blind. I didn't do that. Anyway, Terradome picks.
Come on, Alan. Alan?
I got to go with the Leprechaun.
God
over
damn it!
West. Just don't see him getting beat.
Are you serious?
And then I got the Nightbreed over the Ghoulies. I mean, that was easy. That's all I got. Y'all have a good one. Bye.
Apparently, I'm standing alone on the Herbert West thing.
Apparently, you are.
Me and Gersh. God damn it, Alan. All right. You want the Leprechaun? I'll give you the fucking Leprechaun.
Are you going to watch the new movie?
I will. It actually looks pretty kick-ass, I think. Have you seen the previews at all?
Yeah, I don't know if there's more trailers. I saw the first one.
He looks like some kind of like a fucking honey badger or something.
Seems more like a demon or something.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I like the Warwick Davis Leprechaun, but it's just cheeky fun and, you know, whatever. This one looks like an actual horror film, I think.
Yeah, it does. It looks actually, it doesn't seem as humorous.
Yeah. That was it for the old voicemails. Let's check the tweets real quick here. Oh, we got Jason over at the Reno Horror Society coming in, at Padded Room Pod, and at the Jesse B83. Gimme Nightbreed and Teams.
Jason.
You got it. And Herbert West for singles. Oh, like it really matters at this point. Hopefully he's smart enough to kill a greedy midget. Yeah, well, apparently not. God damn it.
No, because he would use his smarts against him somehow.
Probably. I mean, to be honest, Herbert West is kind of a sanctimonious prick.
Right? Yeah.
So there's always that.
I think he'd just be very easily swayed by what the Leprechaun offers him.
Yeah, but at the same time, he's like a real, you know, logical genius type of guy.
Yeah,
so he might be like, I think this is horseshit. I don't know.
Might be like, fuck you, you little bastard.
Yeah. I'd be like, give me a bowl of cereal and let's call it a day. You crazy bitch. All right, that was it for the old listener mail. How about we get into a movie there, Jesse?
All right.
All righty.
Talking about what happened.
Everything is just pieces, fragments. I couldn't tell you what was real or not.
This type of assault, it's almost always carried out by someone who knows the victim.
They say it gets better, but it doesn't. It never gets easy.
I think you're the only one. Understands.
What have you been telling people about Peyton?
Peyton? He was just right here.
What have you been saying about my son?
I don't know what you mean.
Stop lying!
I'm just
Detective Oler with the Richmond Police Department. There was a break-in in that area.
I don't know anything about that.
I saw you with your son.
When I came back, she was talking to you.
What was she saying?
You need help, Esther, and it's not coming from me.
I need names. Give them up.
I would never hurt you.
I found something that I felt I should tell you about.
Who is she?
Don't you see?
Alrighty. Dude, Jesse, what is it with you people?
You know, here's the funny thing.
And I'm not talking about blind people. I'm talking about you over at the RPN going on.
Yeah, what? Here's the funny thing about that. These are not the type of horror movies I watch. I don't know. I think fate was like, they picked these. I'm going to fuck with you because I picked it at random when I was looking through Netflix. Because I was like, oh, I'm going to do something on the lighter side, something different. Nope.
Well, you failed miserably,
my friend.
We're
not all like that, everyone.
Yeah,
of
course not.
I am not like them.
Jesse's one of the good ones, he says.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. We're talking about Proxy from 2013, starring Alexia Rasmussen, Alexa Havens, and Christina Klebe. Directed by Zach Porter, written by Zach Porter and Kevin Donner. This one is a motherfucker, my friends. That's pretty much all I got to say about that. Now, I don't know if you know this, Jesse, but about a month and a half ago, I had a son, a little baby.
Yeah. And I thought of that the whole time I was fucking this
movie. I've been purposefully avoiding, like, you know, the baby horror movies and the pregnancy horror movies. And then you come along and smack me in the face with this fucking thing.
I failed.
That's
if, I
all
have
right.
another, if I'm allowed in the padded room again, I'll pick something better.
Oh, you're fine, dude. I was going to have to get over that eventually anyway. Our movie starts off with a young lady in a ultrasound exam. She's pregnant. Looks like she's about 9 months pregnant. I don't know about you, Jesse, but I got the vibe right from the get-go that there's something wasn't right about this chick.
Yeah, she just seemed quiet and reserved and kind of like a weird loner.
Very, very aloof about her baby. Yeah. I mean, having recently spent a considerable amount of time in, on, and around OBGYNs, I can tell you those places are just hotbeds with female excitement.
Yeah, and she was just like, it seemed like she was just accepting of it and didn't care.
Yeah, didn't want to know the sex of the baby, didn't really seem at all.
I was wondering if she was raped when I first started watching it.
I could see that a little bit. I kind of got that vibe. She leaves the OBGYN, and she's on her way to the bus stop where she's attacked. And by attacked, I mean really just knocked unconscious, dragged into an alley, and then her big pregnant stomach is beaten with a brick. That made me cringe a little bit.
Me too.
That's pretty harsh, man, especially having recently been around my wife who was recently that pregnant and in that particular condition.
This is when I realized, okay, I messed up.
It's all good, man. So that happens. We get some very graphic and disturbing footage of her being rushed to the emergency room. We see the physical damage that's taken place around her abdomen. And we actually do get to see a dead baby C-sectioned out of her. That's pretty fucking rancid.
That.
Yeah, that's pretty fucking rancid, dude.
One of those moments where I'm glad I couldn't see it.
From there, we get like a line of police questioning. She has to stay in the hospital for a little while. The police are asking her about who may have done this, if she has any grudges against anybody or anybody might be out to get her. And you could pretty much tell, I think, at that point that either I was thinking that she probably did it to herself.
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah, and she may have just either imagined the attack or something like that. I don't know. But she's very aloof, and she keeps pointing the detective towards like just a random homeless person or some psycho that's running around doing this to somebody.
You really get the feeling that she knows who did it, and she's keeping it a secret.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, most definitely. She's there. She's held there at the hospital for a while. She makes her way home, and we kind of get a little snapshot of her home life, which is very isolated. She lives by herself in this house. Very just kind of, if you're in the hospital and you suffer from this kind of an attack, you would think that there would be somebody that would come to check on you or
something. Yeah, you think you'd want everybody around you.
Yeah, nobody. Nobody shows up for this chick. Except like a counselor, some kind of a...
Was it social worker or something, I think?
Yeah, it could be. Some kind of a, I don't know, domestic abuse counselor or something. Shows up at the hospital, gives her a bunch of pamphlets to various support groups and things of that nature.
And she's like, the minute you leave this hospital, we move on to someone else.
Yeah, yeah, we disappear. That's kind of, well, I mean, I guess that's probably the way it works, right?
It is, but that kind of seems shitty though, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, just to come out and say it like that, you'd think
they should assign you someone for outpatient care
or at least give you a phone call or something. You know? Yeah. Hey, you doing all right over there? All right.
Perfect. Hey, your stomach just got smashed at the brick. Are you okay?
Yeah. Need us to, bring you some food or something. I don't know. Anyway,
they seem very clinical and like they didn't care.
Yeah. Yeah.
They fake that they care, but it's like it's a you could tell that we'll move on to the next person.
Yeah, but at the same time, I mean, her attitude towards that lady was very cold and...
Yeah, it's like she had no emotion whatsoever, yeah, even about losing her baby, which was a red flag.
Yeah, right. None at all. She gets home. She has nobody to talk to, nowhere to go. So she checks out one of these support groups, and it's like Mothers in Mourning, I think was the name of it. And it's basically a support group for parents who have lost one or both of their children, either, you know, naturally or tragic means or whatever. She goes, she checks it out. I kind of got like a Fight Club vibe from that for a minute there.
Yeah, I did too. Kind of felt like that.
Yeah, with all the support groups and all that.
Like it's a secret place that we only talk about group things in group.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. She goes there, she checks it out. She's kind of nervous and off-put. Well, I mean, she's just that. That's just her personality, though, you know?
Yeah.
Very quiet, very standoffish.
She's very very shifty. Just.
Yeah. Like just she's weird. Looking at you.
Antisocial, even.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. She doesn't really talk. She during one of the breaks, she's approached by a young lady who's there also, you know, for support for a son that we assume she lost. Mm-hmm. A young lady by the name of Melanie.
Right.
Now, Melanie looks like, I don't know, she's just like your atypical yuppie, I guess you could say.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Nothing very indescript, nothing special about her at all.
Yeah, no, just
a normal person.
Yeah, just, you know, very well-to-do. She's dressed well. She looks like she's, you know, got a good job or something like that.
She carries herself well.
Yeah. She approaches our main character, by the way, her name is Esther. And I don't know, have you seen a movie called Excision?
Yes.
If I got the vibe from Esther that if the chick from Excision had grown up, she would
have become... That would
be her. Yeah, that would become
Esther.
Yeah,
I didn't think of that. You're right. That would be. She would have turned into that.
Probably. Or maybe something.
That movie would have fit in nicely in this...
Yeah, right?
Network month.
Maybe Ian will have me do it next week. I don't know.
But she would have grown up like that.
Yeah, dude, totally. But she approaches Esther. They, you know, kind of hang out for a little bit. They go have coffee a couple of times. We get a backstory from Melanie about her son Peyton that I believe died in a car accident, or at least that's the story we get at
this
point.
Yeah, it said drunk driver, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the story we get at this point. And it's very tragic. I mean, Esther isn't really coming clean about the facts of her child or how the child was lost. And
I don't think she even told her, really, did she?
Well, not yet, but she does eventually.
Right.
Things are kind of, I don't know if they're escalating, but I kind of got like a codependent feel from Esther in regards to Melanie.
I did too, that she was going to grasp onto her.
Yeah, because I mean, there's a couple of scenes where she's like staring at Melanie's phone number and debating over whether or not she's going to call her. And it's kind of like a vibe of, I didn't really pick up on the lesbian thing just yet, but
I didn't either. I kind of thought she might stalk her.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. But I kind of got the vibe of like, here's, you know, like if I were in her shoes, it was kind of like, here's a hot chick that gave me your phone number. Do I call her now or do I play hard to get or should I just, you know,
like that?
Yeah. Getting all up in my head about it. That goes on for a little while. They hook up a few times for coffee. They run into each other again at the group. Intermittently throughout that, we kind of get these weird snapshots into Esther's life. And that takes us to a very bizarre scene that takes place in a bar. And I'm not 100% sure what happened here. All you really see is that she's at a bar. Esther's at a bar by herself. There's two dudes checking her out. Smash cut to she's fucking both of these guys in the men's room.
Are we supposed to think that's how the baby was conceived?
Do you think so? You think that was like a flashback or something?
That's what I'm thinking, maybe.
I kind of got the vibe that maybe she was trying to get pregnant again.
Oh, okay.
Because I think...
Oh, okay, that would make sense.
Leading up to this, she has the conversation with Melanie about how people don't really see her. They just kind
of... Yep, you're right. I bet you're right. I never thought of that.
I could be wrong. You could be right. I don't know. Either way, dude...
Either way, she's fucked up.
You can't be having threesomes in men's rooms at dingy bars.
No.
But if you are looking for a threesome in a dingy bar, you can get a hold of me at thepaddedroom2011@hotmail.com. Moving right along. She goes and she does that. That's kind of fucking weird, dude.
Or you can contact Irma Gersh.
Or, yeah, you know, I mean, we're going to need another dude, apparently. So.
I figured you would know where the bars were, and he would be in the threesome.
Oh, it's going down. I don't know who this young lady is, but she's got something coming to her.
There's a listener that's out there.
Somewhere, right now, she's writing this information down.
She's pausing it and getting a pen.
That's right. Go ahead, sweetie. We'll wait. So that happens. That's fucking weird. Now we get an even weirder scene leading out of that, in which she goes home and she's basically kind of abducted. Well, not really abducted, but she's, I don't know. I got kind of a rapey vibe.
Yeah, this is weird.
Scene. Yeah. She's basically walking around her house and out of the shadows springs somebody, kind of abducts her, like puts their hand over her mouth and drags her away. Cut to her fucking somebody else. Now, that scene is kind of blurry and you can't really make out what's happening other than she's getting nailed from behind, doggy style, and you can't really see, you know, who's doing it. From there, we cut right to her and another young lady laying in bed together. Okay, so apparently that's our rapist, and apparently this isn't really rape because... if it is rape, she's probably the most considerate rapist ever to actually cuddle afterwards.
Exactly. And considering what we've seen in this movie so far, this woman is just as screwed up as the rest of them.
Oh, yeah, dude. Probably more so, I think.
She's calling her girl and saying, I'm your mommy and mother and stuff like that. That was weird.
Yeah, I'm going to keep you safe. And
yeah.
At this point, we kind of get some allusions as to... the fact that she was actually the attacker in the beginning of the film that knocked her out and clubbed her stomach with a brick. It's also alluded to that Esther asked her to do it.
Yep.
Which is kind of nutty.
Yeah, it is.
This young lady, her name is Annika. She's a full-on lesbian. I mean, like an angry lesbian. She's got like a weird star constellation tattoo over half of her face, which is kind of nutty.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah. But that's just what you get there. I mean, you can tell just in a snapshot, this here is an angry, violent lesbian.
Yes.
And it's probably kind of an abusive relationship too, I'd say.
I would think so. I think she rolled the roost in the relationship for sure.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, Jesus Christ, man, look at the way they have sex.
Yep.
So that's kind of weird.
Annika was the man.
Oh, most definitely. Well, I mean... Well, we'll get into the semantics of that in a minute.
Yes.
Now from there, Annika's kind of like a I don't know, she's just kind of there one minute and the next she's gone. I don't think she really takes this relationship seriously. She's probably got a couple other girls on the side.
That's what I was thinking. I figured that she just had she was like a player and had a ton of women.
Wouldn't surprise me.
And they probably all think they're the only one, I bet.
Of course. This Annika, she knows a thing or two, let me tell you. I think I need to get with Annika and figure some things out. From there, we cut back to the relationship with Esther and Melanie because Annika just kind of leaves, and we find out why later. Esther and Melanie are trying to hook up again. Melanie calls Esther, and Esther calls Melanie and because she noticed that she hadn't seen her at group for a while. Esther's walking around the mall, and she's filling out a job application. And she happens upon a very weird scene there with Melanie.
This was gnarly.
It's very, very bizarre to me. Basically, Melanie walks in. She doesn't see Esther. She walks in. She does like a lap around the store, and then she grabs the store manager and starts screaming about how her son Peyton is lost.
Yeah.
He was there 1 minute, and the next he's gone. Now,
and she's trying to describe him.
Yeah, she's really making a big scene there. Now, for where we're at in this movie, for all accounts and purposes, Peyton's supposed to be dead. Yeah.
Yep.
So this is kind of confusing to Esther. She's like, wait a minute, you don't have a fucking kid. She kind of follows her around the store for a few minutes, kind of spying on her a little bit. She sees Melanie go out to her car, get Peyton out of the car, actually alive, little boy, Peyton. Takes him back into the store. Now, what the fuck is this all about? And this takes us back to Fight Club, because in Fight Club...
Wasn't he crying in the car, too?
Yeah.
And yelling for mommy?
Yeah, which is a little nutty. Now, yeah. In Fight Club, Edward Norton's character, Tyler Durden, was like a spectator in all right. these different support groups. And that's I'm assuming that's what's going on with Melanie at this point. She shows up... she has like a prefabricated sad story, and then she just kind of gets off on listening to everybody else's sad story about actually losing their kids.
I think she wanted people to feel sorry for her.
Yeah, I could
give her attention.
I buy that. Yeah, that makes sense. Either way, man, that's fucked up.
Oh, it is fucked up. Yeah. Ugh,
Jesus. And then what the hell is the staging the whole scene at the department store?
I don't know what that was about either.
I imagine she gets off on it somehow, right?
I guess so.
Ugh, creepy. Creepy fucking people, dude. Esther doesn't say anything about this. She hooks up with Melanie again a couple nights later. Like, late at night, she gets a weird random phone call. Yeah. Weird random phone call in the middle of the night from Melanie. And she's like, hey, I'm sorry I didn't call you back. You want to have coffee tomorrow? And she's like, no. Why don't you just come over here? All right. So Melanie goes over there. It's like 11 o'clock at night or so.
Yeah.
They're talking, and this gets pretty fucking awkward pretty quick.
Yes, it does.
Esther makes the remark, something about, I never really wanted to be a mom or something like that. And Melanie's like, and then she just kisses her out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, if you're going to roll the dice on somebody else's sexuality, you better be right. Because if you're not, you're liable to get punched.
Yep, and she was wrong.
Yep, she rolled snake eyes on that one.
And the funny thing about that was she was like, I'm not a lesbian, and Esther's like, I'm not either. And it's like, yes, you clearly are.
Yeah, actually, you are. So, I guess, yeah.
She's like, this is what I thought you wanted or something like that.
Yeah, something weird. And I don't know, man. I guess I could see how you might derive that, but it's just a weird fucking relationship.
Yeah.
Melanie's all pissed off. She's like, no, I think I need to go. And then Esther pulls the Peyton card, and she's like, hey, your fucking kid's alive, dude. And yep. Then Melanie slaps her, and she's like, don't call me. Don't come to group. Don't even fucking know that I exist ever again. And she hauls ass out of there. This leaves Esther pretty much shattered. I think she was kind of putting all of her friendship eggs in the Melanie basket.
I think she was, too. I think she thought she found a kindred spirit.
Yeah, and was really banking on her providing her with some kind of companionship that she clearly wasn't getting from Annika.
That, and I think in her twisted mind, she may have thought that she did approach her because she was a lesbian as well or something.
Oh, yeah, that would make sense. Because, I mean, technically, Melanie did make the first move, so there is that.
Yeah, she did.
Yeah, Esther's just fucking distraught at this point. She's like in a fetal position on her floor crying. The next day, we get a bunch of smash cuts of her getting on a bus, looking at a map. I thought she stole the truck, but later on we find out where the truck came from.
Yeah.
She gets in this random truck and drives. Basically, she ends up at Melanie's house. Now, clearly nothing good is going to come of this, right?
No.
Well, first off, we have Joe Swanberg playing Melanie's husband.
I was going to say, bring that up, yeah.
What do you think of the Joe Swanberg there, Jesse?
I like seeing him in it. It was someone I recognized.
Yeah.
I don't mind him.
I don't mind him either. He just has a face that I want to punch. And I don't know why. I'm sure he's a great guy. He's been in some good movies. But every time I see him, I want to punch him in the face. I don't know. Maybe he reminds me of somebody or something. I don't know. Anyway, she gets to the house. It's a very nice house out in the suburbs somewhere.
Yuppies, as you said.
Yeah, totally. Picturesque. Joe Swanberg plays her husband, Peter. He's some kind of an investment banker or something like that. He works for his father. Yeah. I think she's just a housewife. Esther gets there. She infiltrates the house. It's kind of creeping around. She sees Joe Swanberg watching TV. She sees Peyton getting ready for his bath, and she sees Melanie just kind of, you know, going about her daily business. She creeps upstairs to where Peyton is getting ready for his bath, and you can pretty much do the math of what happens next. She drowns Peyton in the bathtub. That's fucked up.
I didn't see that coming, to tell you the truth. I was stunned.
Me neither, dude. I thought, and this is like a 2 hour and 15 minute movie.
I kind of thought we were nearing the end at this point. I'm like, well, wait, we're not.
That's exactly what I was about to say. Because we get a very disturbing cut of her entering the bathtub and Peyton, who's this very cute blonde little boy, looking up at her. And then she closes the door. And then you just hear a bunch of slushing around when the water in the bathtub. You're like, oh, fuck me, really?
Again, I'm sorry for picking this.
Yeah, that's a little disturbing. But that's kind of, and I was expecting credits right after that.
I was too, yeah.
That's not what happens.
Or even right after what's coming up.
Yeah, this gets even worse, actually. Melanie walks into the bathroom. She sees the drowned body of Peyton. She doesn't notice Esther off to the side just yet. She pulls Peyton out of the bathtub, starts screaming. Esther at this point is still kind of like off in the corner. Joe Swanberg runs in. He sees Peyton and Melanie holding him, and he kind of goes catatonic for a second. And she's like, go get help, go get help. So he leaves, and that's when Esther approaches Melanie. And she's like, hey, I did it. I did it for you. We're for real now. So, you know, you're one of us, and it's the real thing. You don't have to worry about it. And Melanie's like, what the fuck did you do, you crazy bitch? And Esther is just kind of like beside herself. She's like, What do you mean? What did I do? I drowned your kids, so now you really do have a dead kid, and we can really do, you know, whatever. As she's explaining this, Joe Swanberg comes back in with a shotgun. Boom! Shoots Esther in the chest, knocks her into the bathtub.
And then it could have ended there.
Yeah, it doesn't.
No.
We cut to slow motion, and we basically get a very nondescript version of Joe Swanberg shooting Esther in the face with the shotgun in the bathtub. That part was very well shot, I think. It went to slow motion, and then you just kind of see Joe Swanberg's face, and then you see the gun blast, and then just like a two handfuls of gore just hitting him in the chest. So you get the basic idea of what's going on there.
Yeah.
That's a motherfucker. From there, we kind of cut to probably a couple weeks later. Things have really gone downhill around the Melanie and Joe Swanberg.
Swanberg residence.
We might as well just call him Joe Swanberg, right?
Yeah.
I don't even know what the character's name was.
I think it was Patrick something.
Yeah, I think you're right. they're both pretty much catatonic. I mean, Melanie has just let herself go. She's just hanging around in a bathrobe. Swanberg just kind of stares out the window, and all they do is fight and scream at each other, and shit's really just deteriorating quick.
Which I would think if you live through that, that's probably how your life would end up.
I would imagine.
Just be so broken.
Yeah, I would imagine. That's a motherfucker, of course. We get this character of Melanie is fundamentally askew, even before the tragedy.
Right, because she's pretending her child is lost all the time.
Yeah, right.
Or dead.
The story kind of picks up with these two, and Melanie, for the first time in I guess a couple weeks, is going to actually get out of the house, go to Peyton's school, and get all of his things from his class. That, I imagine, would be a pretty tough trip to make.
Yeah.
She gets there, and she basically starts groping the teacher, which is kind of weird.
That was weird.
Yeah. That happens.
It's the thing that happens in this movie.
Yeah, right? Surprisingly tame, considering what we've been through thus far. From there, we cut back to Annika. Now, Annika just got out of the joint. I don't know what she was there for, but I think they said assault and battery charge or something like that. She gets out. She realizes that this baby killer that's all over the news is actually Esther, her ex-girlfriend, and is fucking furious, and she wants to find the family that killed her. Now, I'm not sure what the justification would be for revenge in this case, right? Because, I mean, yeah.
I don't get it either.
You killed my girlfriend, but she did kill your, you know.
And I killed a baby.
Yeah, so.
Well, she's just a psycho bitch.
That's really all there is to it, Jesse. She's just fucking nutty. And she's pissed off because she lost her lesbian lover. So,
yeah, that's, I think that's all it is. She lost one of her harem that I'm sure she has.
Yeah, right? You would think she could replace her.
Yeah.
She's pretty fired up. She's trying to find the family that killed Esther. She goes to the newspaper, makes a big scene, threatens the reporter. She goes to the... she's basically just, you know, trying to find this family. The trail kind of goes dead because nobody's going to tell her who the family is or where they live or anything. So we're kind of safe at this point for right now, or at least the family is. Now we cut back to the family. Joe Swanberg is still staring out the window, and we find out what exactly it is he's staring at. There's a truck parked outside, and it's been there since the day that Peyton was killed. He does a little pajama detective work and goes out there and starts snooping around, opens it up, gets the, registration out of it, and sure as shit, it's registered to Annika. So that is where the truck came from. Now we can draw the conclusion that Esther didn't steal the truck. She just went to Annika's hotel or apartment or whatever it was, got the spare key, and used it to drive to Esther's place, or Melanie's place. So that makes sense. Swanberg calls the cops. He's like, hey, I just broke into this truck and I stole the fucking registration. They're like, you crazy idiot, put it back.
Yep, exactly.
You can't be breaking into people's stuff.
You can't be calling about it either, you dumbass.
Yeah, don't call the cops on yourself, you knucklehead.
Don't you know better, Joe Swanberg? You've been in enough shit.
Come on, Swanberg, get it together. That's a fucker. They come and they run the plates and they find out it's registered to Annika, who's a convicted felon or whatever. So they go back to Annika's place and they question her about the truck. Now, they won't release the truck to her. They just kind of, tell her where it is, and they need to find out if there's a connection between her and Esther and all that. In doing so, they accidentally reveal the location of the family. I mean, Annika can put it together that Esther took her truck and took it over there to kill the baby. So now we have a problem because Annika knows who this family is and where they are. So she does what anybody would do. She calls her tattoo artist and has her tattoo artist take her over there so she can fuck with this family. That's pretty much exactly what happens. She gets there. She breaks in. She finds Melanie, ties her up. Well, leading into that, though, we have that scene where Swanberg says he's going to leave Melanie. And there's like a big fight, and I think, doesn't he pull the shotgun on her or something like that?
I think he does, yeah.
And that's something else I didn't get. Because leading up to that, there was like a weird thing right before or right after Melanie left to go get the kid stuff where Swanberg runs upstairs and he pulls a random chick out of the bathtub. And then, like, takes her down to the basement?
Was he imagining all that?
That's what I don't know.
I'm thinking he might have been, because it didn't fit.
It didn't, and the chick that he pulled out of the bathtub looked an awful lot like Esther. So I
think he was imagining that he was doing that.
I think so, but at the same time, it doesn't. It's not overtly stated, so you can't say right. for sure.
Yeah,
and then you have like a lot of weird cuts of the basement door closing and a bunch of thumps and rattles going on behind it. So who knows, really? And this is where things get weird, because he said he's leaving, as in asking for a divorce, I would presume.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
And then he takes off. Annika shows up, ties up Melanie, and she's like, hey, I'm going to torture you. When's your husband getting home, and what the fuck is going on? And Melanie's kind of fucking with her a little bit. And then she's like, what is that sound? Is that running water? And she's like, I don't know what you're talking about. She runs upstairs. She's like, you fucker, your husband's upstairs taking a shower. So she runs up there with a hammer, and she opens the bathroom door, and she's like, oh, fuck. Now, we don't see what she sees. I'm kind of leaning towards Dead Swanberg. What do you think, Jesse?
I think so, too.
Yeah, I don't know what else it would be.
Unless, which doesn't make sense, though, if he said he was leaving.
Unless right after that, she killed him. I mean, during that scene where they're having the big argument, he's got the shotgun, but he sets it down on the counter, and she keeps looking at the shotgun.
Maybe she did blow him away.
That's the only conclusion that I can come to.
Yeah.
Either that, or there really was a chick chained up in the basement, and Swanberg put her in the back. I don't know, man.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
It's open to interpretation, my friend.
Yes, it is.
Anyway, whatever she sees in there kind of disturbs her, because she comes hauling ass back downstairs, where she finds that Melanie has gotten loose of her restraints and has found and loaded the shotgun. She kind of starts at her. Melanie shoots her in the leg with the shotgun. She goes down. Melanie comes up the stairs and points the shotgun at her, and then kind of goes into this weird news flash thing in her head, I guess, where she's suddenly being interviewed on some daytime talk show, and she's explaining about how the death of her son and this crazy bitch, and then her lesbian lover comes back for revenge and kills her husband, but then she kills her, and she's feeling better, and she's so strong and all that. And then we cut back to Annika, who's still just wounded on the stairs, and she's like, who the fuck are you talking to, you crazy bitch? And then either Melanie pulls the trigger, or Annika swings the hammer at her, or both.
Because we heard a shotgun blast.
We did, and that's right when we cut to credits. Woo! That is a motherfucker, Jesse.
That is a motherfucker. That's a mindfuck of a movie, too.
Yes, sir. What'd you think, man?
You know, overall, it's grim. It's not something I'd tell any old person to watch, but I thought it was well made and well done, and it held my interest the whole time.
Oh, absolutely. Pretty brutal.
Yeah.
Pretty heavy on the child trauma.
I think what really got me too is it's brutal in both senses of it's physically brutal and it's a mental mind fuck.
It is, because you can't really, I mean, every time you think you know what's going on, some little screw gets turned and you're like, oh, okay, here's another fucked up person.
I think a good word to overall describe this would be grim.
Yeah, I'd say so.
But not bad.
No, it's actually a really good movie.
Yeah.
If you're okay with, you know, the connotations involved, and you can kind of buckle down with it.
If you like that sort of stuff, give it a watch, because I think you'll be entertained.
Yeah, you hear this, Alan?
I just messaged them on Facebook right before we started, him and Onyx, and I said, both of you need to watch this.
Yeah, you sons of bitches.
Because I know how they are. They'll enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good movie, and it definitely kept me guessing, and I thought it was well shot. It looked good. Like I said, I do want to punch Swanberg, but I can't tell you why.
I think he's coming up in another, I could be wrong, but I think he's in that movie coming out next month called The Guest.
Oh, nice.
So you'll be able to punch him on the big screen.
Alrighty.
Just walk into the movie theater and punch the screen.
No, I'm going to punch that dude. Let's see what we got here. I got a kill count of 6 on this one. That's, two kids, four adults?
Yeah, that'd be about right, I think.
Yeah. See what I wrote down here. Gruesome abortion. That was pretty nasty with the brick.
Yeah.
They didn't have to show the dead baby being C-sectioned.
No, they didn't.
I get it. You want to have, you know, some kind of a reaction there. I think she did it to herself. I was wrong about that, obviously. These support groups sound horribly depressing. I think they're supposed to.
That would have been a great angle, though, if it would have, you found out at the end she did do it all to herself.
Yeah, yeah.
That would work, too.
What I was expecting, we see the attacker just kind of like from behind, and we see a red sweater. I was expecting at some point for there to be a red sweater hanging in her closet or something like that.
Yeah, that would make sense.
How fucking how fucked up can one person be? Jones Swanberg. Why would he come back with a shot? That's something else that I don't think really made sense. His son drowns in the bathtub.
Unless he knew he was going to kill that lady.
Well, I mean, I get that, but just judging on the like the 15 seconds of conversation between her and Melanie in the bathroom,
yeah,
I don't think he could have really derived that Esther killed Peyton. I mean, my first reaction would be, who the fuck is this and why is she in the bathroom?
I wouldn't be toting a shotgun around.
No, dude. Not when it's, you know, at first glance, you're going to assume that was an accident of some sort. Why would he shoot without asking questions? Swanberg is even more annoying in slow motion. is this a cruel irony? Yes, it is. Crazy movie, dude. I say check it out. It's a good show.
Yeah,
I agree. Like a Serbian film and I Spit on Your Grave, you got to know what you're getting into before you sit down for this one, dude.
It's a different kind of brutal than those movies, I think, but it's good. Yeah. I mean, it's a good movie.
Yeah, it is.
It has a better plot overall than those other two, as far as twists and turns.
Yeah, yeah, a lot more character-driven, this one.
Yeah.
As opposed to just brutality-driven.
I agree. The Frankenstein says check it out.
Excellent. Jesse, let's take ourselves a little break, and we'll get back with some other stuff, huh?
Sure.
All righty.
I'll make that shit airs.
And we're back for the second time. Take two. All right, man. Let's go ahead and follow you on Twitter as the Padded Room Twitter follow of the week. That's at JesseB83.
It's actually, that was the old one. It's at the JesseB83.
Oh, holy shit.
There's a the between it because I forgot the password for the old one.
That's a motherfucker, isn't it? Yeah. I hate that, dude. I try to keep my password the same for everything.
I do too.
But then, of course, something gets compromised and I got to come up with a new one. And then I can't remember what I did for the, it's a fucking son of a bitch.
I hate passwords. I wish there was another way.
Yeah, right? The Jesse B. Blind Frankenstein. There you are.
There's me.
Blammo. I like the YouTube playlist. A day without a friend is like a pot without a single drop of honey left inside. Oh.
Yeah, I was retweeting Disney quotes.
You big softy, Jesse.
I've been called the softy of the network and the nicest man in podcasting.
So. I could see that. You're a pretty nice guy there.
Everybody's like, wait a minute. He just picked this fucking movie and then he's retweeting Disney quotes.
Oh, you're either the nicest guy or the creepiest guy. One or the other, man.
I don't know. I don't want to be creepy.
All right, dude. Let's get into some Terra Dome action, shall we?
Sounds good.
Oh, Jesus. Couple of fucking blowouts this week.
If it was anyone other than Leprechaun, I would have picked Herbert West because Herbert West is awesome, but
gotta but go with... Dude, it's a fucking Leprechaun. Oh, God damn it. I don't even know what to say right now. All right. First, last week's winners. In singles competition, we had Herbert West, Reanimator, versus the Leprechaun. And the story continues. What in God's name had been going on in that farmhouse, no one could say. Missing lads from the local pubs all chopped up and stitched back together. Gore everywhere. And in the middle, the dead body of the scientist himself, frightened to death with a handful of four-leaf clovers shoved into his mouth. There was a reason that house had been abandoned for so long. With a vote of 12-6, the Leprechaun advances over Herbert West. Dude. Whatever.
There's always next Terra Dome.
I don't get it, but if that's what you people want, then fine. Just fine, then. In teams competition, we had the Nightbreed versus the Ghoulies. And the story continues. Midian burned, but so did the Naturals with it. They came with their guns and their trucks and their righteous indignation. They brought all that they had against the tribes of the moon, and the tribes of the moon had persevered. None thought the humans would go so far as to summon imps to infiltrate the breed, but they were found and fed to the berserkers before any real damage could be done. With a vote of 16-2, the Nightbreed advances over the Ghoulies.
That was a beating.
Yeah, it was. I knew that was the Ghoulies.
That was even more of a beating than Leprechaun.
Yeah, the Ghoulies never do anything. And now this week's matches. As usual, inmates, bear with me. I'm not a writer. Here we go. Let's start it off in singles competition, shall we? Nope. Here we go. He knew that he should feel remorse. He just didn't. While his friends from the military academy panicked and fought amongst themselves, he felt nothing at all. Whatever adolescent consensus they reached about what to do with the dead body was irrelevant. He wasn't the one drinking, and he wasn't the one driving that night. He was merely a passenger. Even if he was found liable in some minuscule way, his father's team of elite attorneys would get him off with less than a slap on the wrist. Being the heir apparent to the Thorn Corporation had its benefits. Even before the bizarre deaths of his adopted parents, Damien knew that he wasn't like other kids. Bad things had a tendency to happen to anyone that would bring him harm. not to mention the continued appearance of the random black dogs. On this night, however, the dog was nowhere to be seen. Just him, his half-drunk friends from the academy, and of course the dead body in the yellow rain slicker. All this talk of calling the police and doing the right thing was becoming nauseating. Damien had to act as the voice of reason. Calling the police would put them all in jail for a very long time and bring shame and scandal to their very wealthy families. What they really needed to do was weigh the body down and find a long pier for which to throw it over. And when the body was found, if it was found, it would be little more than a skeleton and probably be written off as a drowning. Of course, they followed Damien's directions and all that was well for a few weeks, until the first of the murders took place. Damien's friend Carl, who had been driving that night, found stuffed in his locker with a fish hook protruding from a fatal neck wound. In singles competition, we have Damien Thorne versus the Fishermen from I Know What You Did Last Summer. Well, sometimes I need filler villains here, Jesse. You know what I mean?
I do have to say something.
Go.
If this turns out like the Leprechaun one did, I will probably be as angry as you were.
Dude, you got to go with Damien on this one, right?
You have to go. If you don't, I'm curious to see why someone wouldn't and what their reason would be, but other than trying to just screw with everyone, yeah, you have to go with Damien.
In 4 years, four consecutive Terra Domes, I don't think the Fisherman has ever gotten a single vote.
I don't know who he would even beat.
Possibly Ghostface, but that's about it.
Yeah, but Ghostface could even beat him, depending on who it was.
Probably, yeah. I don't know. The vote stands at 2 for Damien Thorne.
That is a great one.
0 for the Fisherman. Let's swing it on over to the old team's side. They'd been holed up for almost a month now. Sheriff Wydell had been hot on their trail until they crossed the West Virginia border. The fireflies found themselves the perfect hiding place, deep, deep in the woods where no one would ever find them. The abandoned building must have been a hospital of some sort. It was huge and gave plenty of room to spread out. Things were great the first week or so, but now supplies were low and Rufus's attempt at hunting were laughable at best. Tiny managed to catch an odd squirrel, but that was hardly enough to feed all of them. From the surrounding forest, they were being watched. The Hattiger brothers knew the forest better than anyone had, and at one point had been patients in the mental institution in which the fireflies were now squatting. The Hattigers were hungry and never took kindly to uninvited guests. In team's action, we have the inbred cannibals versus the firefly family. This is a better one, I think.
Yeah, that is.
I think I'm going to go with the Hattiger brothers on this one. Just because they're not so much into the tomfoolery that the fireflies are.
Yeah, I think they're more, in some ways, animalistic and brutal, and they know the area, so I think I'll go with them, too.
That's 2 for the Hattigers, 0 for the fireflies.
It could fight, though.
Yeah, it would, although we've never seen a Hattiger brother talent show. So that's going to slow you down a little bit there, fireflies.
Right.
Alrighty, those are your Terror Dome matches for the week. In singles competition, we have Damien Thorne versus the Fishermen. In teams, we have Inbred Cannibals versus the Fireflies. As usual, inmates, get us your votes by next Sunday if you can. The mental health hotline is 206-309-9117. You can also reach us on the email at thepaddedroom2011@hotmail.com. Or you can tweet me your votes. You're going to have to follow me at paddedroompod is the way to go. That is it for the Terra Dome, duders. Let's get into some what are you looking at, huh?
What are you looking at?
Blammo. Jesse, you watch any horror movies this week, dude?
No, not really.
No?
Other than Last House on the Left for Horrorcopia last night, I really haven't watched anything horror-related.
Now, did you watch the original or the remake?
The original.
And you've seen the remake?
I've seen the remake, yes.
You like the remake better, huh?
I like the remake better.
Yeah, I have to agree. I'm a huge fan of Garrett Dillahunt. I think that guy's a bad motherfucker.
And yeah, he is.
While he may not... be as intimidating as David Hess. I think, I don't know, man. I mean, David
Hess, he's got his own thing going.
Yeah, David Hess was creepy, but in the almost absurdly psycho kind of a way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
Where Garrett Dillahunt struck me as more like a desperate escape convict, and he was willing to
David Hess is kind of over the top.
Yeah, man. I mean, that whole piss your pants thing and all that.
Yeah, that was weird.
Come on, dude. What are you doing?
Yeah, exactly.
What's going on over there? I got to go with the remake on that one, dude. Let's see what I watched. I watched Lake Mungo from 2008. You seen this one?
I've heard of that, and I haven't gotten a chance to see it, but it always looked good to me.
It is a pretty kick-ass movie. We actually covered this in one of our first episodes, as I recall.
Is it streaming still?
I think so. I caught it on late night cable. I just happened to turn the TV on when it was on. Mockumentary-style ghost story with some pretty wicked twists and turns in there. A lot on the spirit photography and things like that. Mm-hmm. Pretty kick ass, dude. I'd say probably one of my favorite ghost stories. Also, Fright Night 2 from 2013. You seen this one, Jess?
I have it, and I haven't watched it yet.
Did you see the Fright Night remake with Colin Farrell?
I did, and I enjoyed it.
Okay, something very weird happens here where you basically have to pretend that never happened. And I don't think there's any kind of association with that at all.
Okay.
Like, in this one, we have the return of Jerry Dandridge, but it's a female. And they're in Eastern Europe. And there's no allusions to any of the events that took place in the first one at all.
That's strange.
'Cause if I recall correctly, there wasn't... Yeah, you had McLovin in the first one, and I think he was supposed to be, like, evil from the originals.
Yeah, he was,
but
I think.
He gets vampirized, and then I think Charlie has to kill him. But in the second one, there's another guy that they call evil, and pretty much the same thing happens to him. So I'm assuming that we just have to write off the first one completely.
So it's like a reimagining of the original just set in Eastern Europe then.
I guess. I mean, I don't know how else you would approach it, because it's not really a remake of the second Fright Night with Grace Jones, right?
Right.
I don't know, man. I mean,
did you like the remake?
I wasn't mad at it. It wasn't, you know, I mean, I think it would have been a lot better if they had changed the character names and not called it Fright Night. They just called it like...
Made it its own thing.
Yeah, like My Vampire's a Neighbor, or My Neighbor's a Vampire, or some shit. Yeah. You know, just some...
like a Disney movie, though.
Yeah, that's true. You know, you probably
I remember they had that one a couple years ago, My Babysitter's a Vampire.
Oh,
or some
Jesus
shit.
Christ. Yeah, you got to get a little more creative with the title there. Yeah, I mean, I think I probably like this one better than the first remake with Colin Farrell.
I'll have to check it out, then.
Yeah, it's not bad. Special effects are pretty good in it. That's all I'm looking at this week. Why don't we go ahead and jump into some immersion therapy, huh?
Alrighty.
Immersion therapy.
Now, Jesse, you seen Jugface from 2009?
Yes.
Good show, I'd say.
Overall, yeah, I agree.
Original, definitely a head scratcher. So, let me get this straight. You got a group of people that worships a hole in the ground.
Yep.
And periodically, the hole tells them that who they need to sacrifice by way of having the village retard make a jug in the likeness of the dude that they need to sacrifice.
I think that's pretty much it.
Okay, good.
I wonder if there's like a monster or something in that hole, though.
Could be. I mean,
that's what I always kind of thought.
That the brother gets fucked up in the hole. I mean, you don't really see why. The screen just kind of goes all psychedelic on you, and then he's dead. it's original, if nothing else, right?
We definitely
haven't seen that before.
I think the ending was kind of predictable, though. Like GP said, you kind of saw it coming a mile away. Like, there was no twist in it.
Yeah, and I think Crack...
Other than finding out that she was banging her brother, that was the only twist in the movie.
Well, yeah, and you find that out, like, 15 minutes in.
Right.
Yeah, I think Crackhouse Matt was right. We probably could have done with a little, you know... I don't know. Yeah, probably maybe like a monster at the bottom of that thing, or some kind of a fucking. Maybe they're all on drugs or something. I don't know.
Yeah, something. Although the scary thing about that is being, of course, in Pennsylvania and traveling to West Virginia and being around places like that, I could very easily see a small group of people worshiping a hole in the ground.
That's frightening to me.
It is. Yeah. Be glad you're where you are. I mean, we have those type. We have a. About a half hour, 20 minutes, half an hour away, there's like the ridges, we call it, and when some of these people come down from the ridges, it's you're watching some inbred cannibal movie.
Nice.
It's scary. Like it's literally everything you would think from watching like the Fireflies stuff.
Oh, that's beautiful, man.
Yeah.
All we have out here is tweakers, and we got plenty of those, and you can spot them a mile away, and you're like, hey, that guy's a tweaker. He doesn't worship a hole in the ground, but he is probably going to try to borrow money from me, so there's that.
I don't know. Somehow I'd rather deal with that.
Yeah, it gets a little sketchy from time to time, but at least they're predictable.
Yeah.
Not a bad show, I'd say. Once you get the gist of it, then it becomes a bit predictable. But like I said, original, if nothing else.
Yeah, it's worth a watch. It's on Netflix.
Yeah, so. Streaming right now. Let's see. Your immersion therapy for this week is going to be An American Ghost Story from 2012, starring Stephen Wardokulis and Liesl Kopp, directed by Derek Cole. This got 3.5 stars. I guess it's not that bad. It's got 3.5 stars, so.
Guess we'll find out.
Yeah, I guess so. And GP will probably yell at me next week.
Yippee. Does he do that a lot when it comes to immersion therapies?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I got a nice little streak going right now. I think we're at like 5 weeks in a row without him yelling at me. But I'm going to have to break that because people seem to really enjoy that.
Pick something shitty.
I think I did. I think this American Ghost Story.
We'll find out.
I guess so. Let's get into some werewolf action, huh?
Company of Wolves.
Let's see. What are we? Everybody's doing the ALS challenge. That's pretty cool. I noticed that Alan and Kreese were wearing their werewolf t-shirts when they did it. That's pretty fucking sweet. Yeah. So Crackhouse Matt challenged me, and then I challenged Alan, Kreese, and Multiple Mics. Multiple Mics isn't going to do it. I don't know what his problem is. Alan and Kreese both did it. I got to tell you, man, I hooked up with Kreese about a year ago to go to an H.P. Lovecraft film convention. And
that
I
sounds
had,
fun.
There's
torture.
Here's the thing, man. I can make a movie about a gorilla and say it was inspired by H.P. Lovecraft.
Okay, I see what you mean.
You know what I'm saying? So yeah. Some of these movies, I don't know. but the thing is that I hadn't seen Kreese in over a year now. And then I just saw her on the ALS challenge. Dude, Kreese is looking good, man. Kreese, you lost a lot of weight, babe. I could tell. That's hot stuff. I like that. Alan's looking good. Jesse, you're looking well, my friend. I saw you on the ALS challenge.
Yeah, I'm
you moving away. Moving around a little bit, are you?
Yep.
Very cool, man. Gersh did his. That's pretty sweet. He's a little bit bitter from what I saw.
He's a bitter man in general.
He is, just in general.
Oh, he's fucking bitter.
Yeah. Yeah. Bad stuff. He's got to lighten up or something.
Yeah.
Other than that, dudes, I think that's about going to be a show for the week. You got anything else for anybody out there, Jesse?
Nope, not really. I just had a lot of fun, and thanks everybody for writing in. Fine, thank you, Gersh, for leaving a voicemail. We need to get to the bottom of if Irma Gersh and Jamesy are in fact multiple personalities.
I'm going to have to go with yes on that one.
I think so too.
I don't think there's any other explanation. No. Jesse, where do people find you, buddy?
People can find me on, of course, as we said, Twitter at the JesseB83. I'm on Facebook under Jesse Bollinger. You can find all the podcasts at purelyrandomnetwork.com. And each of the, well, the ones, the Bump of the Night and Horacopia also have their own feeds.
Oh, nice.
On iTunes if you don't want to subscribe to all the shows. But who doesn't want to get I Hate Your Face?
Yeah.
They actually have a really good show.
They do. I like those guys. I'm going to have Ian on here next week, I think. You can also find the, what is it, Gorilla Position
Gorilla
Wrestling?
Gorilla Position is once a month. It's on there too, yes.
Now, you guys just talk about wrestling over there?
Yeah. James and I just bullshit.
Very cool. And then, of course, you have Brenna's Podcast Adventures.
Brenna's awesome.
My personal favorite.
Yes. Everyone's personal favorite. She already has me lined up for when I'm there. We're going to do a Brenna's Podcast Adventures on Frozen.
So. Ooh, wow. Very cool, man.
Should be fun.
Sounds like it. All right, inmates, for the Padded Room Podcast, I'm Darian, and that's Jesse. I'm afraid visiting hours are over.